This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
1:15 remaining. Neal onto the far side for Perron. Skips across the line again into where the corner. Perron curls there on the far side. He gets toward the side of the slot. The shot goes. He scores. David Perron will end it. 3-2 the final score for Vegas in overtime.
Don't you hate those games where nothing happens? That was from Thursday night, the Vegas Golden Knights defeating the Winnipeg Jets in overtime. That game on Thursday, still a hot topic of conversation almost 48 hours later. Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live via the iHeartRadio app and at TSN1290.ca, we say good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew Mandel, Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsberg in studio with you for the next 3 hours, celebrating 9 years of Illegal Curve Radio, Winnipeg's longest-running sports radio show. I say good morning to Dave and Ezzy. Gentlemen, good to see you both on this blustery Saturday morning, but there's nowhere else I'd rather be than in studio with you two fine gentlemen.
How the hell have we been on air for 9 years?
I don't know. If we keep cursing today, though, might not make it to 9 years plus 1 week.
9 years.
I know.
And we haven't killed each other.
We've got close. We got close, I think, on a couple different times. There was some yelling. You and Remus once got into a fight. That was still entertaining, and I regret not videotaping that entirely.
I think Richie wanted to kill me a few times when he used to come to pick me up, and you know I was still sleeping. But
yeah,
you haven't done that in years.
Well, I mean, in Ezzy's defense,
coinciding with Naomi.
Yeah, with Naomi, you know, maturing him, and of course the fact you're going to be a father soon enough, you've matured on him. You know, I was going through some of the old clips, and they're most of the old clips that I enjoy the most are Ezzy being a complete goofball.
Such slow day as, at work, Drew.
No, Remus had produced these for us a long time ago. This is like when you were showering yourself with a hose because you didn't buy a shower head for a while.
And, good old days.
Yeah, when you ate a rotten apple because you bought your produce at a local convenience store,
7-11.
Not a grocery store. Your claim that Kraft Dinner was a healthy food choice, things of that nature. I can't use them anymore. You're a responsible, mature adult, and I just don't like it, I got to tell you.
Drew, I fell asleep last night with a piece of pizza on my chest.
Well, so now I'm happy again.
I'm still not that responsible.
There was also the time that you found a piece of pizza under your pillow from about, I think it was 3 days old or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Those things just don't happen anymore. And I got to say, I liked you better the other way. Good morning, Dave. How are you doing on this Saturday morning?
I'm doing well.
That's good. I don't have any of those funny stories about you.
I try and keep it.
Yeah, you keep it on the DL pretty well.
There. Dave's classy.
No, let's not get carried away
far.
Now. Classy with a K, maybe.
Yeah.
Anyways, let's get started by looking back at the week that was for the Winnipeg Jets. It was a battle of first place teams coming to town this past week. It started, of course, on Tuesday night with the victory over the Tampa Bay Lightning, a solid win by the Winnipeg Jets. And then Thursday, a much more controversial game against the Vegas Golden Knights, featuring one of the best overtimes I think we've seen here at Bell MTS Place. It was certainly dramatic. It had everything you would ask for. Fortunately for Jets fans, they fell on the losing side of the ledger, but it was an entertaining night at the barn on Thursday night.
Yeah, that was actually the first game of the year that I watched as a fan. I usually go to one or two games with my sister, and we picked the right game because that overtime, I agree, Drew. I think that was the best overtime we've ever seen at Bell MTS Place since the Jets have been back. And guys, we have to start off with Eric Halla's goal.
Yes.
And I think we all agree that it wasn't a goal, but when you go back to that game, and you know, obviously that game gave the Golden Knights their first lead of the night. I mean, that to me was absolutely the turning point, and obviously, you know, it looked like the Jets might not even get the point because Kyle Connor's goal came pretty late there in the third period, but I mean, the NHL guys has to look at this because even if the puck was already behind Hellebuck and all of that, I mean, James Neal, and I've watched this replay probably 20 times now, you can actually see his blade fly, you know, past Blake Wheeler. Obviously, he was battling with Dustin Byfuglien there in front of the net. But, I mean, he breaks his stick on Connor Hellebuck's mask. And, you know, we've talked about it, you know, over the last day here on the radio station. We haven't been on air since Thursday night. But how is that a goal? I mean, the NHL has to revisit how they are interpreting what is and what isn't goalie interference.
Well, I mean, it definitely is a slashing penalty. But we know that penalties and missed calls on penalties are not reviewable. But if you, with that in mind, do you think it's goaltender interference as well as the slashing penalty?
The puck is there behind Hellebuck, and Neil had just slashed Hellebuck in the mask. How is he supposed to react? And I mean, if he doesn't get slashed, maybe he, you know, he turns around and he covers the puck.
Or he falls back and he covers the puck, whatever it might be. It doesn't just sit there waiting for Eric Hall to tap it in. You're saying it's goaltender interference because the slash, which should have been a penalty call, it stuns the goaltender into into interfering with his movements.
And that's what he said after the game. He said it forced his head down and stunned him for enough time that he was sufficiently unable to kind of react and kind of look for that puck because he'd just been smoke in the head. Now, the interesting thing to me, at least, is the fact that, you know, like I said, it's pretty clear that the slash happens and you see the helmet. Like it's funny because our photographer captured it perfectly and you just see the blade is snapped. Now, some people have said, well, did Flynn lift his stick up? But the reality is you doesn't still matter. Need to be in control of your stick. So if you're slashing down, you're still going to – I mean, his stick still could have snapped across, you know, the goalie's chest, whatever. So, I mean, obviously sometimes stuff like that gets – they get away with that. But the interesting thing to me was the memo that the NHL talked about, you know, this weekend after some of the controversial plays that goals were disallowed when they maybe should have been allowed. So it was almost as if the NHL had sent out a memo and Paul Maurice talked about that also the next day. So – that to me is the interesting thing because these players don't know what is and what isn't goaltender interference anymore, and that's becoming a big problem.
You're absolutely right. It's a big problem. Nobody has any idea. They went from being overly judicious with saying it's goaltender interference to not judicious enough on Thursday night in the Jets game, and then of course in the Bruins and St. Louis Blues game as well, where Jake Allen gets cleared out of the net and the Bruins score, and Doug Armstrong is not happy about it. Here's what Connor Hellebuck had to say Thursday post-game regarding the slash.
What he said is the puck wasn't covered. It was laying in the crease. So the guy was allowed to take a two-hand smack in my face. I don't understand it. I think it's a terrible call. You would think the video replay is there for that reason. I don't even think their team wanted that goal. Obviously, they're going to take it. But that's just dirty, and I don't put that on them. I mean, that's hockey. I can take a stick to the face. But just because I don't throw my head back and make it obvious, I feel like I get kind of screwed on this. And this is my fourth goal with my helmet, having an issue with it. Goal with my helmet off, goal with my buckle off, goal where a guy tramples me. Maybe I should start diving a little bit. I guess that's just ridiculous.
Stick was laying in the corner, so there's plenty of evidence that you got slashed there. Did they say, did they concede that they maybe missed a penalty call, if nothing else?
Well, that's what I said to him. He just shrugged his shoulders at me. He said, when they touch the puck, it should be a penalty. And I don't know how I'm supposed to find a puck when I'm getting a stick across the jaw and jawing me down, and now I can't find it. Now I'm completely dazed. They messed up tonight.
Connor Hellebuck on Thursday night after the Jets-Golden Knights game, that's in referencing the Eric Hall and James Neal controversial goal, of course.
I agree with Hellebuck 100%, Drew, and you can obviously hear the frustration in his voice there, but, I mean, is anybody actually going to say that that wasn't goalie interference and that goal should have counted? I mean, they got this wrong. I don't care what anybody says. That should not have been a goal.
Well, a lot of the pundits, I mean, have said that it should have been a slashing penalty, and then once it wasn't a slashing penalty, they were okay. Once the slashing penalty was missed, they understood why they didn't rule it goaltender interference.
Okay, hold on a second. Hold on a second, though, Drew.
Okay.
Okay, I see what you're saying, and I understand
that
argument.
I'm not agreeing with that point. I'm just saying
that's
what a lot of people are saying.
If you slash a guy in the chest, because let's be honest, James Neal slashes him. It's kind of like upper chest, and then he gets a little bit of his mask.
Right.
I mean, he breaks his stick. It was obviously a hard enough slash that the stick breaks, even though composite sticks break a lot easier than the old wooden sticks back in the day. But the point is, it was a hard enough slash that the stick broke, and then they score right after because the puck is laying there. As far as I'm concerned, it's goalie interference. Slashing a goalie in the chest, slashing him hard enough that your stick breaks, that's goalie interference.
It's both a slashing penalty and
call it whatever you want.
Call one or the other is what you're saying.
I think what as he's saying is that if the refs miss the slashing penalty, which would have negated the goal because the
If they called the slash,
then of course the whistle goes. Then if you don't call that as the goalie interference, as the slash, the reality is the stick infraction is still in Ezzie's mind. a goalie interference call, I would imagine, right? And if you think about it, it does make sense. I mean, how I just, you know, every single player on that team was like on the Jets, of course, was kind of standing around going, how could you even think that to call that a goal? I mean, you know, I'm watching the replay right now again on our computer here, and to me, it's like it's not even a question. Well, look at that.
You know, the part I like the best about Hellebuck's comments are, and he's right. If he flops around there on the ice after taking the slash from Neil, and if he's dramatic about it, and he's woe is me about it, they probably call it goaltender interference. It's to his detriment in this instance to be stoic. Now, I'm not blaming him, of course, but you know, because he's probably stunned that he just took a slash off the helmet. But if he is more, you know, if he's more flopping in his crease when he's interfered with, he references four times this year that he's been jostled and had his mask interfered with and goals have counted. If he's more dramatic about, you know, reacting to being touched in the crease, he probably gets the benefit of the doubt. He just sits there, and again, I'm not criticizing Connor Hellebuck about this. He just sits there after taking the slash, and because he doesn't react in a dramatic manner, the refs are like, okay, it's a good goal.
And Drew, let's be honest here. I mean, they lost the game, and this point isn't going to prevent the Jets from making the playoffs. The Jets are going to be a playoff team this year.
Yes.
And they're first in the Central. They're battling Vegas for first in the West. I mean, it's not out of the realm of possibility the Jets are still competing for a President's Trophy by the time April comes around. I mean, this is going to be a playoff team, but that's not the point. It's the principle and I think the precedent that this is going to set, because we've talked about this, you know, since the season started back in October. Mm-hmm. I mean, the NHL has missed a lot of these calls, maybe not missed the calls, but the calls have been wrong. And if this decides a series, that's the whole point. If we're, you know, whether it's the first round or the Stanley Cup Finals, I mean, if one of these types of calls, similar to 99 with Brett Hull's toe in the crease, if one of these calls or wrong calls, I should say, if this determines the outcome of a series, I mean, there are going to be a lot of furious players, general managers, owners around the league.
You could argue it already did, Ezzy. Last year's playoffs between Edmonton and Anaheim. Remember Anaheim's furious comeback against the Oilers when they were down 3-0 with 5 minutes to go?
Yep.
And there's the goaltender, I think it was Kessler, was basically holding down Cam Talbot.
That was a really tough one to call, though.
I thought it was pretty, I mean, it might not have been as blatant as a two-handed slash like it was on Thursday. But the problem is you can't review goaltender interference accurately because all the actions and activities happen in real time.
Yep.
So slowing them down, you know, frame by frame just doesn't work.
Yep.
And I really,
no, it's a good point.
I think the blame on this, as much as it falls on the NHL as a collective for not maybe finding clarity on it, it falls on the general managers for putting it in the first place. Video cannot solve all the problems. It can't prevent every single missed offside by an absolute millimeter. It can't prevent every single goaltender interference, was it or wasn't it, because it's such a judgment call in the heat of the moment. The only thing that video review should be used for is to determine if the puck crossed the line, period. That's the only thing it's good for. Is did the puck cross the goal line in its entirety? Should it count as a goal? The old system, it was working. I was okay with it. If an official maybe missed a goaltender interference or missed an offside by a millimeter, c'est la vie. But now that you're reviewing everything and you're scratching your head and is it or isn't it, it's just an absolute dog's breakfast of idiocy that we witness on a game-by-game basis.
You know what I like? What Scott Campbell tweeted out on Thursday night. He said, my solution to goaltender interference is have no interference calls. Basically, let the goaltenders have free blocker punches to the head of any opponent. Obviously, he was joking.
The Billy Smith.
But it's got to the point where, I mean, you almost have to look at going back to the way it used to be.
You know what? I was considering this. I was talking about this at the office yesterday with some people, and I thought that this might even be a solution to it. Maybe make the crease smaller, reduce the size of the crease, and go back to the Brett Hull rule in 99. Make the crease smaller. And if anybody is in the blue paint when they shouldn't be, it's no goal.
Come on, Drew. We don't want to go back to that.
Well, I mean, right now you're in the middle. You're in such a constant area of gray that you have no idea what's good or what's not good. So you just make it black and white.
Yeah.
You reduce the size of the crease. The goalie is protected in this smaller crease. No ifs, ands, or buts. And you know, maybe that's the solution to the whole thing. I don't think it is. I don't think it's going to happen. But the NHL's got to do something about it because, like you said, Ezzie, it's going to eventually cost somebody a playoff series if it hasn't already done so. When we come back, we talk about the Jets' first goal scorer from Thursday night. He's having a career year. Joel Armia, next up on the block. You're listening to Industrial Metals Winnipeg Jets Game Day. We're live with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
For Joel Armia, Armia sends it ahead, shorthanded. Armia with 10. Armia toe drag, scores! Joel Armia, who had 4 shorthanded goals last year, gets his first of the season, and it is a shorty. And the Jets make this a 5-2 game with their third shorthanded goal of the year.
We've talked about how Kyle Connor has been one of the bright spots for the Jets tonight. I think Joel Armia has been another one, too. He showed some examples in the first period how he led that fourth line to some ozone pressure. And then in the defensive zone, he's got a real good stick to pop the puck into a lane, steps into it, and right there as he corrals it to settle it down. How about the skill? Like you said, Dennis, last year, 10 goals. He combined for 19 points. 4 of his 10 were shorthanded, and he adds another shorty here.
Joel Armia already set career highs in points, tied his career high in goals. You know he's going to break that, given that there's still a good chunk of this season left. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment brought to you by Dr. Les Rikus and the team at Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Don't be an Ezzie. Always wear a mouth guard and give yourself peace of mind protection, as well as facial, teeth, and mouth protection. To make an appointment to get your teeth to ting, visit LindenMarketDentalCenter.com. As I mentioned, Joel Armia already with a career high in points. He's got 22 in 49 games this season. His previous career high was last year with 19 points in 57 games. Certainly been a little bit of a late bloomer given he was a first round pick back in 2011 with the Buffalo Sabres. But is Joel Armia, this is clearly the best Joel Armia we've seen this year, Ezzie. I think you would agree with that. And is he the Swiss Army knife kind of player the Jets have been missing since Michael Frolik didn't re-sign here and went to Calgary instead?
I think so. And I think that, when you're talking about Michael Frolik, Frolik's a better offensive player, I would say, even though I think Armia, he has untapped offensive potential, I would say. I mean, Frolik's more of kind of like a 20-goal, 50-point guy. I don't know if Armia can get to that. I wouldn't be surprised if he did. I think maybe he's more of a kind of a 15-goal, 40-point guy. Mm-hmm. But he's been playing most of the season, guys, either on the third line or the fourth line. And I agree, Drew. I mean, that game against the Golden Knights on Thursday night, that was arguably one of Armia's best games as a Jet. And obviously, Matt Hendricks deserves a lot of credit for the work that he did, behind the net with Marc-Andre Fleury, digging that puck up and getting it to Joel Armia. Let's be honest, that was an empty net for Armia, but sure. The point here, guys, is Armia has become a very dependable player for Paul Maurice, and you actually saw him with 2.5 minutes of power play time on Thursday night. So he's a guy that you can put out there on the second power play unit, Dave. You can put him out there to play on the penalty kill. I mean, very good 5-on-5. I mean, Armia's got great hands, guys. But for me, what's most impressive about Armia is how good of a defensive player he is. And, he gets in on the forecheck quite often, but very smart player, a very good defensive player. And, right now he finds himself on the third line. Earlier in the season, he was on the fourth line. But, I mean, you mentioned Swiss Army knife, Drew. I mean, he's just a very versatile player. Joel Armia is the type of guy that you could put him on the first or second line on the wing, Dave, and you have no problems or no issues with his play. You know that he's going to give you the same type of play night in and night out. And again, I don't think anybody expects, Joel Armia to be a 35-goal scorer, but you mentioned, Drew, 10 goals right now ties his career high from last year. He could easily get to 15 goals this year and maybe even higher. But the biggest thing for me is how dependable he's been night in and night out. And you forget, this is his third year with the Jets. He's always going to be linked to that Evander Kane, Tyler Myers trade between the Jets and the Sabres. But the point is that I think Armia is definitely going to factor in here for the Jets long term because he's proven to be very valuable, as we mentioned. I mean, put him out there on the third line, put him out there on the fourth line. If you have some injuries, maybe you put him out there on the second line. He can play on the power play. He can play on the penalty kill. So he's putting together a great year this year.
Dave, Armia's averaging just over 12 minutes a game, 12.09 per game this season. Would you like to see his numbers get bumped up a little bit? Has he deserved more ice time than he's been getting as of late with the Jets? I mean, he only played, if I go back to the game on Thursday against Vegas, he played 12.14. Game before that, 13.10. He's usually been around the 13-14 minute mark. Thursday obviously was a little bit lower for whatever reason. Do you want to see Armia maybe getting more shifts, more time on ice than he has been getting from Paul Maurice, more than the 12 minutes or so he's averaging?
I think it's circumstantial. I think that the coach generally plays players based on the circumstances of the game. So it's hard to say that he deserves 15 minutes when he gets 13 minutes because you don't know what's happening in that game. If there's power play or penalty, you know, that dominate the game, then that's why sometimes we see guys like Jack Roslovic's numbers go down or up, right, based on what's happening in terms of special teams. So it's hard to say, but, I mean, I've been a Joel Armia fan for quite some time. I think defensively specifically his really probably one of the Jets' best players. He's very responsible. He's the puck sticks to him like no other player, I think, on the team, in fact. I think in tight, you know, even under pressure, I think he just doesn't have that panic in his game. And there's always a comfort, you know, knowing that Joel Armia has the puck because you don't anticipate really sort of a mistake, kind of a brain fart that sometimes you see players do. Like, he really just doesn't have that panic. He always seems to be under control, and he seems to be able to make a solid breakout pass if it's in the Jets zone. So to me, he's just a very responsible player who just kind of knows where to be. He's very quiet. He's not a flash. There's not a lot of flash. Like, he doesn't have the same sort of pizzazz of, you know, some of the higher end, like the Ehlers and the Lyonnais and the Wheelers and the Scheiflies. But to me, he just goes about his business, and I just think he's just he is like in that sort of Michael Frolik. I think he's like Michael Frolik light, if you will. Like as he's right, he probably doesn't have the same sort of offensive, you know, ability, or maybe he just hasn't had the opportunity that Michael Frolik did. But mm-hmm. at the same time, I think that he's a very good player, and he's the kind of player that every team would like to have.
When Frolik played for the Jets, they didn't have the skilled wingers that they currently have that are playing above Armia. I mean, there's a bit of a glass ceiling above him in terms of moving up. Not to say that he's necessarily a top six player, but even in a top six opportunity, that would mean that, you know, Perreault or Ehlers or Laine or Wheeler, you know, would be bumped down. And I don't foresee that happening for obvious reasons.
Yeah, I really like Armia's game. And, you know, I've always liked his game since he came over from the Sabres. And, you know, you forget he's a big player as well, 6'3". And he's a guy that, you know, you can put out there in a checking role. And for me, that's almost when he's the most effective. But then he can also chip in offensively. I mean, 10 goals is a good accomplishment for a guy that, you know, played the majority of the first half of the season on the fourth line.
Mm-hmm.
And again, you know, he's been a streaky scorer this year. But regardless, I mean, if you're getting, you know, 15 goals out of Joel Armia this year, I mean, he's definitely surpassing your expectations. So I think he's turned into a really good player for Paul Maurice and the Jets. And, you know, I really like what he's doing right now on the third line. And you know, you mentioned, you know, should he be given more ice time? And I think he's getting some of that on the power play. But, I mean, let's be honest, guys. Once Mark Scheifele comes back into the lineup, it's going to be hard for Joel Armia to crack into the top six. But, you know, if Joel Armia is on your third line or fourth line,
sure,
I have no problem with that.
Well, you saw what he and...
Because that means you have a good third or fourth line.
Right. You saw what he and Adam Lowry and Andrew Kopp did against Kucherov and Stamkos and Namestnikov on Tuesday night. And if you're Paul Maurice and know you have a quote-unquote shutdown defensive line, I mean, that's a tremendous comfort from the head coach's perspective. Armia is going to be a free agent, a restricted free agent at season's end, 2 years away from unrestricted free agency. Do you see him long-term as a member of the Winnipeg Jets?
I do.
Like beyond the 2 years of RFA status that he has left?
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm not sure if the Jets, you know, sign him to a two-year deal or longer. I would expect him to sign maybe a 3 or 4 year deal, but absolutely, I think he's earned a longer term contract, if you want to call it that, Drew. I don't think the Jets are you know, going to open up the wallet and give him a 6 or 7 year deal at $5 million a year. But I would absolutely have no problem with the Jets giving him a 3 or 4 year deal.
Dave? The guy's 24 years old, and you know, he's a nice piece of this team moving forward, and he's not going to cost you a tremendous amount of money. So I don't see why you wouldn't give him a little bit of a longer term deal.
No, I would agree with both of that assessment. In that, you know, he's not going to cost you an arm and a leg. Certainly, I mean, you could probably get him for 4 years, and I mean, if I'm just spitballing here, you know, if you gave him $2.5 million a year for the next 4 years, it'd be something he'd probably have to consider, and then he'd hit a free agency again at 28. And if his game continues to blossom, I mean, he's going to likely be probably finish the year somewhere between 15 and 20 goals this year. He's got 10 so far. You know, the way he's been playing as of late, you know, it would not be surprising to see him get to that benchmark. And that's a pretty good total in this day and age in the NHL, especially if you're playing primarily in a five-on-five role, or you're playing primarily even in a shorthanded role, because it's not easy. If you've got a guy who can score five-on-five, and his numbers aren't inflated by getting all your goals on the power play, that's not something that grows on trees. That means you're scoring in the hardest situations to score in the league.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And, you know, I think he has definitely earned more ice time. But, again, I mean, we know how much skill and speed that the Jets have on their top two lines. So, I mean, it's been really nice to see, I mean, Armia and the way he's played this year. There are many Jets that are having a great season. I mean, obviously led by Blake Wheeler, but Armia has been a big factor for the Jets, and I think he will continue to be as the years go by.
He certainly will be one of those RFAs or contract situations to keep an eye on as it as we get closer or through the regular season and into the off season. When we come back, Mike McIntyre of the Winnipeg Free Press is going to join us. We'll talk more about the Jets. I'm sure we'll touch on Thursday night's controversy as well and start to get you set for tonight's game against the Colorado Avalanche. It's Industrial Metals Winnipeg Jets game day. It's the 9th anniversary of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Bottom of the hour, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're working on getting Mike McIntyre on the line, but we seem to be having some phone difficulties on this Saturday morning. It looks like the phones decided to sleep in a little bit later this morning there, Dave.
Okay, well, we'll get James working on it, and we'll just keep blabbing about the Jets.
That's what we're pretty good at blabbing about. The Jets, of course, in action tonight as part of Industrial Metals Winnipeg Jets game day. It's the Jets and the Avalanche, another key matchup in a week of key matchups. This is the first Central Division matchup of the three of the week, of course, though. And it'll be a good one against a Colorado Avalanche team that's been playing some pretty good hockey, well, certainly this year and sort of since the Matt Duchene trade earlier in the season. That's sort of been the turnaround for the Colorado Avalanche this season, is the Matt Duchene trade. The Avalanche without Nathan MacKinnon tonight, which is a huge loss given that he's been a popular pick for the Hart Trophy. He's been their best player this season. So the Jets are going to be facing a wounded Colorado Avalanche team this season, or pardon me, tonight at Bell MTS Place. Working to get Mike McIntyre on the line as he is. We're having a little bit of phone difficulties on this Saturday morning. But what are you looking for in tonight's Jets Avalanche game?
Yeah, well, I mean, you mentioned right now they're without Nathan MacKinnon for a couple of weeks, and you know, they're competing right now for that last wild card spot in the Central Division, Dave. But we've obviously already seen the Jets and Avalanche play here a couple of times, with the Avalanche winning the last game in early January, Eric Johnson getting that overtime goal in a game in which the Avalanche played really well. But I mean, this is a much improved team from last year. I mean, Drew talked about it. When you're talking about Matt Duchene and that trade, I mean, they have definitely, it almost feels like the Avalanche have a weight off of their shoulders right now. And, you know, without Nathan MacKinnon in the lineup, you know, the Jets catch a bit of a break here, but lots of skill up and down the lineup. Mikko Rantanen is a guy that I've been very impressed with. Gabriel Landeskog, guys, has had a great year after a very disappointing year. And when you're talking about the Avalanche, a 48-point team last year, you thought, okay, well, if everything goes according to plan, maybe, you know, they're going to get up to 70 points. But right now, I mean, you could easily see this team, you know, sneaking into the playoffs. It sounds ridiculous to say, but, you know, they could get up to 90 to 95 points here. It's probably going to take closer to 95 points to get into the playoffs this year in the Western Conference, Central Division especially. But it's a very good team top to bottom. I still don't think it's the strongest blue line. You know, Nikita Zadorov's a guy that, you know, they brought over from Buffalo. I've always been a little bit underwhelmed by him, but, you know, Eric Johnson's having a great year. Tyson Berry's still an excellent defenseman, so it's going to be a big test. You know, the Jets have started off here in the first two games of this homestand really nicely, but this Avalanche team, I think Drew nailed it. I mean, they're much improved from last year.
Yeah, and you know what, Ezzy, to me, the big thing is the fact that they, you know, they reeled off 10 wins in a row. They had a bit of a stumble. Obviously, they've lost. They went the last four. They went 1-2 and 1. But at the same time, you know, still a very dangerous team. And Jared Bednar, if it wasn't for Gerard Gallant, maybe in the running for the Jack Adams.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Well, it appears as though we got the hamster back on the wheel, so we're going to bring Mike McIntyre of the Winnipeg Free Press on.
A.K.A. Dump.
A.K.A. Dump. Mike, good morning. How are you?
I'm doing good, boys.
That's good. Thank you for joining us. Jets and the Avalanche, of course, tonight at Bell MTS Place. Before we look forward, we have to look back to Thursday night, the controversial decision by the NHL to not rule goaltender interference or not rule that as a slashing penalty. Do you still think there's a lingering distaste in the mouths of the Winnipeg Jets players over how Thursday night went down, you know, losing in overtime? And is this an angry team that's going to be facing the Colorado Avalanche tonight?
There's definitely a lingering distaste. You could see it and certainly hear it yesterday at practice. It was what really all the players still were talking about. And I guess to their credit, they seem to be adopting the attitude of, look, we can't change this. We don't agree with it at all. We're upset and confused by it, but let's move on. But I do think that this could be, not that this team really needs it, but this could be one of those rallying points, us against the world, because they feel that they got absolutely shafted by the league and by the officials on that call. And so, you know, I think that this is something that could serve them well going forward, that they do have a little bit of an extra chip on the shoulder. And, you know, maybe that's something that will help them here as they continue, because On a long homestand like they're on, I think the risk, of course, going into this was maybe they get a little too comfortable in their home surroundings, and maybe this is something that's going to help them, you know, keep them a little more mentally sharp.
You know, Mike, everybody knows how good of a year Blake Wheeler's having and Patrick Laine, Nikolai Ehlers. Joel Armia, though, had a goal and an assist on Thursday night versus Vegas. We were talking about him last segment. What's impressed you the most about Joel Armia's play this year?
I think it's been his consistency lately because, you know, game in and game out, he just looks like the same player. There's not the big highs and the big lows that I think maybe we saw with his play earlier in his career. Even last season, I think you just know what you're going to get with Joel Armia. And it is impressive, isn't it, guys, that the Jets now have eight players who've already hit double digits in goals, and there's still 30 games left in the season. I mean, that is pretty incredible depth, and, you know, the kind of depth that I think most teams would love to have. When you can roll that many guys out there who are capable of putting the puck in the net. And the other thing with Armia, I mean, no matter where you play him, you know, he's been third line, fourth line. He's had maybe not the minutes that some Joel Armia fans would like to see, but he really does maximize his minutes, and he's been very effective. And as a result, you know, I remember, geez, it seemed like it was just yesterday that there was a lot of debate. You know, Marco Dano and Joel Armia were almost seen as interchangeable in terms of where you play them in the lineup. While Joel Armia right now has absolutely cemented his spot in this lineup, where Marco Dano is still very much fighting to get in the lineup when they're healthy. So good on him. He's definitely taken a big step this year.
You know, Mike, we're looking at the schedule. The Jets don't have a back-to-back till the end of the month when they're, you know, playing in St. Louis and Dallas. So do you envision Connor Hellebuyck playing every game for the remainder of, you know, until that time? Or do you think that Michael Hutchinson's play in that Tampa game will give him an opportunity before Steve Mason comes back?
No, I do see Connor Hellebuyck probably going the distance here on the rest of this homestand. I mean, Michael Hutchinson he's not in the Jets' plans, as far as I know, beyond this season. And the only reason he's here, of course, is sort of an emergency backstop, because Steve Mason, of course, is injured. Mason, who, by the way, is starting to skate again, doesn't mean his return is imminent, but he is back on the ice, which is a good sign. But no, I mean, Connor Hellebuyck, you know, they gave him that little bit of extra rest out of the All-Star break that was hotly debated about how that went down, and good on Michael Hutchinson for making the most of that one chance. I just don't know that we're going to see another opportunity anytime soon because they do have a lot of time between games. I mean, you look at even after today, right? The Jets have 2 days before they play again, like two full days. Mm-hmm. And then after that, on Tuesday against Arizona, they get two more days. So the schedule is really much in their favor. And with what Connor Hellebuyck has done this year, it wouldn't surprise me at all to see Paul Maurice just continue to put him back in the crease.
Mike McIntyre of the Winnipeg Free Press is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's an optional skate for the Winnipeg Jets this morning, an optional game day skate at Bell MTS Place. But it's certainly worth noting, of course, that Mark Scheifele, out of the non-contact jersey, he's back in a regular Jets jersey. Don't expect to see him in the lineup tonight, but he's certainly getting closer. Mike, as it pertains to tonight's lineup, we expect Dmitry Kulikov to return from his concussion, and it seems like he's going to line up on his offside on the right side. Are you surprised by that decision to play Kulikov on his off wing tonight for the Winnipeg Jets and keep Sherratt in the lineup over Tucker Poolman?
Yeah, I am a bit, because I think, you know, Paul Maurice has actually spoken very highly of what Tucker Poolman has done, but I guess in their eyes right now, Ben Sherratt obviously has a lot more experience, and maybe now, as these games take on greater importance as we get into this later stretch of the year, they're almost valuing some added experience on the blue line over the rookie in Poolman. So yeah, I am a little bit surprised. Kulikov, we talked to him yesterday. He said he's comfortable playing on his offside. He's done that before. And we talked about the Jets having a chip on their shoulder. Dmitry Kulikov has a bit of a chip on his shoulder. It was interesting because yesterday was the first time we've talked to him since he was concussed back in San Jose a week and a half ago, and he's not happy with the NHL either. Because Thomas Hertl, who boarded him and got that major and kicked out of the game, well, he didn't get any additional discipline by the NHL. And we asked Kulikov about that. He actually said that from what he heard from the league, they were essentially saying that he was partially to blame for the hit that left him concussed. They felt that he maybe turned his back at the last second. Kulikov doesn't agree. He thinks that it was a really dirty hit. And it's interesting, he said, well, maybe if that sort of thing is allowed, I should start doing it. So just add one more Jet to the angry pile, if you will.
You know, Mike, Drew mentioned that there's an optional game day skate happening right now at Bell MTS Place. And with Scheifele on the ice in a regular forwards jersey, Paul Maurice is obviously going to have some big decisions to make here in the next week or two. Do you see Blake Wheeler moving back to right wing? And do you see Jack Roslovic sticking with the Jets?
I do see Blake Wheeler moving back to right wing. Look, I think Blake Wheeler has done an absolutely terrific job filling in. I do think, though, in recent games, I just don't think Blake Wheeler has had the same sort of jump that maybe we saw a little earlier, because they are asking so much of him, and you know it's bound to start taking a toll. He gets the tough matchups, defensive matchups. And I think Blake Wheeler, he's one of the premier right wingers in the league. And so you put him right back there on the top line with Scheifele. And, it's a nice feather in the cap to know that if you need him, Blake Wheeler can go to that center position and be very effective. But I think you go with what you know really works. And that's Blake Wheeler on the wing. As for Jack Roslovic, I really do see him sticking. The Jets, you're right, they're going to have some big decisions to make. And what does that mean for Marco Dano, for instance, who, to me, is the guy that is probably going to have a really hard time cracking the lineup. But the Jets would also now potentially be in a position where they may have to try and send someone back to the farm. So the easy thing to do would be to do a player who doesn't require waivers, like a Roslovic. But I don't know at this point if they would want to take him out. They're still playing him on the top power play unit. So it's going to be really interesting. Like, do they try and swing a trade so they don't lose an asset for nothing? Some very big decisions coming up for sure in the next week or so.
Mike McIntyre, our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Mike covers the Winnipeg Jets, of course, for the Winnipeg Free Press. Mike, two straight games. I mean, you mentioned Jack Roslovic and how he is playing sort of up on the top line, and he replaced Kyle Connor, who bumped down to the fourth line. Two straight games, though, that Kyle Connor has managed to score for the Winnipeg Jets, the game winner on Tuesday and then the game tying goal on Thursday. Is Kyle Connor maybe sort of shaking off the, let's call it the mid-season doldrums that are so frequent with a player who are so, you know, usual for a player in his first extended NHL look and beginning to get back to being the player we saw earlier in the season?
I really think he is, and isn't it incredible that, you know, he's third on the Jets in scoring, and he's actually only 2 goals now behind Nikolaj Ehlers. He's hit a bit of a rough patch here. I think Ehlers hasn't scored in something like 8 games now. So Kyle Connor is quickly closing in on being the Jets, you know, next best goal scorer, not named Patrick Laine. And yeah, he's playing on the fourth line. And, you know, there's another player where what do you do with him? Because you probably would like to get him more minutes, more opportunity. It's just that top six, and it's going to be even more crowded with Scheifele back. And you don't really want to mess with that third line because it's been so effective in the checking role. So, you know, you're back to this situation where you've got really good players now playing really far down in your lineup. But I don't think that's a bad thing. I mean, honestly, I think the Jets were at their most dangerous this year when Matthew Perreault was on the fourth line. And I don't know that Matthew Perreault is going to find himself back down there. They may just leave that second line exactly as it is right now. But, you know, I think when you can spread your offensive talent out like that, it becomes a matchup nightmare for your opponents. So I think it's a good problem to have. But, my goodness, they sure do have a significant amount of depth, especially at forward this season.
A wealth of talent for the Winnipeg Jets, especially as they get closer to health with Mark Scheifele on the ice in a regular jersey, no longer wearing the non-contact jersey.
Mike, go ahead.
Just
to jump in, I should say that's a bit of a surprise. I'm down at the skate this morning, but Paul Maurice said the other day he thought it was going to be at least a full week, which that was, I think, on Wednesday before he comes out of the no contact. But, you know, I watched Mark Scheifele all week at practice, and he was absolutely flying. And he actually, you know, there were some times in drills where he was initiating some contact. You could tell this is a guy who absolutely wants to get back in the lineup ASAP. I'm not saying he's playing tonight, but I bet you he will be doing everything possible to convince the coach to put him in.
Well, that will be a welcome addition to the Winnipeg Jets lineup, whether it happens tonight, Tuesday night against Arizona, or next Friday against the St. Louis Blues. Mike McIntyre covers the Winnipeg Jets for the Winnipeg Free Press. He joins us from Bell MTS Place, where there's an optional skate for the Jets ahead of tonight's Jets-Avalanche game. Mike, appreciate your time this morning. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, guys. Take care.
Take care, Mike. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're on TSN 1290 as part of Industrial Metals Winnipeg Jets Game Day.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN1290.ca.
One chance. It's a breakaway opportunity for Eric Johnson. He shoots. It's good. With 10 seconds left, Eric Johnson wins it for the Avs in overtime.
The last time the Jets and the Avalanche met, just about a month ago, right after the New Year, it was a 2-0 Avalanche lead in the third period before the Blake Wheeler show took over. He scored both the goals for the Jets that tied the game, went into overtime, and Eric Johnson winning it for the Avs in overtime. Avalanche winning the first two meetings of the season, both in Colorado, both in overtime. So these two teams have played some very tight checking hockey games thus far this year. The Jets look for revenge tonight on home ice for the first time this season. They get to play the Avalanche at Bell MTS Place. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment is brought to you by Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com. Avalanche, as we mentioned, going to be without Nathan MacKinnon as he's out of the lineup for 2 to 4 weeks. They were able to win their first game without their captain in the lineup. That happened on Thursday night as they were able to defeat the Edmonton Oilers by a 4-3 margin in overtime in Edmonton. You know, this Avalanche team has still got skill on it. It's not like they're hopeless without Nathan MacKinnon, but it's certainly going to be a bit of an uphill battle. But you wonder if they're looking at it as a challenge and as a sort of us against the world phenomenon, much like the Jets were able to persevere and even increase their performance without Mark Scheifele in their lineup.
Yeah, Drew, and you mentioned, you know, last segment, you know, without Nathan MacKinnon in the lineup, I mean, you lose your best player there, but he is only going to be out of the lineup for 2 to 4 weeks. So we see Mark Scheifele now coming back a little bit ahead of schedule, possibly for the Jets. But for me, what's the most impressive? I mean, we talked about, you know, the Avalanche were the worst team in the league last year, and we didn't expect them to be in this position this year. But for me, what's most impressive is how young they are. And right now, you've got two rookies that are your number one and number two centers. Alex Kerfoot is your number one center right now, and Tyson Jost, who we saw with UND last year, is your second line center. And, you know, you mentioned the skill. I mean, this team can score goals. I mean, MacKinnon and not having him is obviously going to affect them, but, you know, we talked about Landeskog and Rantanen, so Kerfoot, you know, replaces him on the top line. But, you know, and JT Compher, another guy who's still very young. And, you know, for me, what's maybe been the most impressive line has been their third line of Blake Como, Carl Soderberg, and Matt Nieto. It's been a great checking line for them.
Three professional hockey players right there. None of those three guys are what you're going to call as flashy by any stretch,
right,
but they all know their role. They're all veterans who've played in some big games throughout the league. Nieto, of course, spending a lot of time with the San Jose Sharks, and Soderberg, of course, came over from the Boston Bruins a couple of years ago.
They brought Soderberg in to be their second line center, and you know, he's much better suited, in my opinion, to be a third line center. And you know, him and Como have 10 goals each. So that's not bad. And when you're talking about, you know, the Avalanche, I mean, the goaltending has been very good. Varlamov and Bernier have both been good in net.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, this is just, I think, a team that had such low expectations. You know, talk about playing with a chip on your shoulder. I think they've been playing with a chip on their shoulder the whole year, and not many people expected them to be in this position. And they're only 1 point behind the Wild for the last wild card spot in the West. So, I mean, they obviously need this game much more than the Jets do. But the Jets have already lost two games, as you mentioned, to the Avalanche, and they want to erase that stench of that Golden Knights loss on Thursday night. So, I mean, I expect this game to be another tight game, but certainly a great story that the Avalanche are in this position because, as we mentioned, just nobody thought they'd be here.
Yeah, we don't know who's going to be in that or the Avalanche lineup just yet. They're going to hit the ice at Bell MTS Place coming up in about an hour's time or so, so we'll certainly let you know as to what their lineup situation is. If you're Paul Maurice and you now have sort of that shutdown unit in Lowry, Armia, and Kopp, assuming Lowry returns to the lineup after missing part of Thursday night's game, and Paul Maurice seemed to indicate that he thought Lowry would be fine for tonight. Who do you deploy that lineup against if that's your shutdown trio? Do you put them up against Landeskog, Kerfoot, and Rantanen? That's probably the top Avalanche lineup. But the, you know, Wilson, Jost, and Compher, there's a lot of skill in the young duo of Jost and Compher, of course.
Yeah, I would expect the third line, Adam Lowry's line, to go up against the top line of the Avalanche. That's the most skilled line on this team, but we'll see what Paul Maurice does here. But we've seen in previous games for most of the year that he's not afraid to put Lowry's line against the other team's top competition.
Yeah, Dave, what are you looking for from the Colorado Avalanche tonight, especially on their back end? I mean, they've sort of become a whole new team with Samuel Girard coming over from the Nashville Predators as part of the Matt Duchene and Kyle Turris deal earlier in the season.
Yeah, I mean, again, this is a team that nobody anticipated doing anything, really, and what they've been able to do, again, if it wasn't for Gerard Gallant in Vegas, I really think that Jared Bednar would be, you know, the Jack Adams winner for getting the most out of this Avalanche team. It seems that, you know, he's turned some water into wine with a group that, you know, everybody anticipated being down at the bottom with Arizona, and instead they're, you know, what, 1 point out of a wild card spot right now. So, you know, this is a team that really, They're a good skating team, and the guy I like want to watch tonight is JT Compher, you know, a young guy from University of Michigan, played San Antonio Rampage a couple years ago, and I think his game is, you know, I believe he had the game winner in overtime. I think Andrew Kopp was throwing a little bit of shade at him during post practice interviews yesterday, saying, "I don't know who got the goal. I've never heard of that guy." But
both University of Michigan guys,
yeah,
of course,
yeah,
they go
both
back together,
and of course he played with Kyle Connor on the big CCM line. So he's a player I'm going to be watching tonight. But no, I think it's an Avalanche team that the Jets know they owe a little bit of payback. 3-2 overtime losses both times this season already. So it should be a good one. But I think you hit it, Drew. I think the Jets are still kind of pissed about the loss in against the Vegas Golden Knights, and I think that they're looking for a little more home cooking on at Bell MTS Place.
As Tyson Barrie's name has come up in trade talk. I'm not sure I understand why the Avalanche would be looking to move a puck moving defenseman like Tyson Barrie.
Yeah, I don't think they're moving him right now.
Yeah, I've heard of, he's on the TSN trade bait board, and it's something I haven't been able to wrap my brain around. He's still got a couple years left before he hits unrestricted free agency. Puck moving defensemen like him are it's not like they have a plethora of defensemen who are banging on the ceiling to get up there and play for the Avalanche. So I'm not sure why Tyson Barrie would potentially be on the market. He certainly gives it back a little bit in the defensive zone, but I think there's more pros to Tyson Barrie's game than there are cons. If you remember back a couple seasons ago when the Avalanche won the Central Division unexpectedly, and then they lost in seven games to the Minnesota Wild, if I recall correctly, in the first round of the playoffs, that's the year that Matt Cook took out Tyson Barrie in that first round. A lot of people think that had Barrie been healthy for the entirety of that first round series, the Avalanche would have been able to move on to the second round and defeated the Minnesota Wild, and then so that was sort of the last big hurrah for the Colorado Avalanche prior to their improved play this season. When we come back, Lauren Gardner is going to join us. She's a Colorado Avalanche studio host and reporter for Altitude Sports. Much more on the Jets opponent tonight, the Colorado Avalanche, up next. You're listening to the Industrial Metals Winnipeg Jets Game Day and the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Hour number two starts now with Lauren Gardner. She's the Colorado Avalanche reporter and studio host for Altitude Sports. Lauren, good morning, and thanks very much for joining us.
Good morning. How are you guys?
We're doing very well. How are you enjoying your trip to Winnipeg so far?
You know what, guys? It's everything I thought it could be and more. A little chilly.
You're from Denver. You're living in Denver. Can't be that much colder than it is down there.
Oh, guys, Denver's made me soft. You know, it gets up to like 60 degrees Fahrenheit on an average day sometimes in like December.
Well, it gets up to about 60 degrees Fahrenheit on an average day in May here, so it's almost the same thing.
Same thing.
Yeah.
Totally the same thing.
Lauren, obviously we brought you on to talk about the Colorado Avalanche. They're in town tonight against the Jets at Bell MTS Place. A key Central Division matchup between these two teams. The Avalanche were in a playoff spot up until yesterday when the Minnesota Wild leapfrogged them as a result of their victory over the Vegas Golden Knights. But, I mean, as we sit here, 50 games through the season, if you were going to tell most Avalanche fans that they're going to be in the heart of a playoff race, that they have games in hand on a lot of playoff teams, given the disaster that was last season, I think they all would have taken that and said thank you very much and run away at this point in time.
Oh, absolutely. I would have been skeptical after what happened last season. I know there was a huge turnover in that dressing room, and Joe Sakic and company continued on with the plan of getting younger and faster, and they stuck with it even when people were questioning what was taking place. And, it's really starting to pay dividends. You see what the rookies are doing. You have Alexander Kerfoot now stepping up in place for injured Nathan MacKinnon to center that top line. And, he's performing really well. You have JT Compher, another rookie, who scored a goal in overtime. And it's been so fun to watch and actually be a part of. But it's just crazy to see the kind of parity that's in the West right now, specifically in the Central Division. So, if they were in this place last year, obviously they'd be a little bit more comfortable. Because you go on a 10-game win streak and you're still battling for a playoff spot, it's pretty crazy.
Lauren, one of those rookies that you didn't mention there is Tyson Jost, and we're familiar with him here in Winnipeg. He played last year for the University of North Dakota, just a couple of hours south of us here. He's going to be now playing on that second line. Is it safe to say that Jared Bednar is going to be depending a lot more heavily on Tyson Jost here with Nathan MacKinnon out of the lineup?
Oh, sure. Secondary scoring is going to be crucial, and Tyson Jost, guys, not only showing a lot of promise on the ice, but as you probably know, off the ice, he's a wonderful kid. We've had a lot of fun covering him with his family, obviously the infamous Grandpa Jim. But yeah, him on that second line that Colin Wilson is going to be a part of, and JT Compher. So he's roommates with JT Compher. So those two have a lot of chemistry, both on and off the ice. They joked, they play ping pong to determine who has to do the dishes. And when I asked him about that, he said he has the advantage because he took ping pong at North Dakota, which, guys, I did not know was a class. But they're looking for some consistency from him. He's had a little bit of trouble with that just due to injuries. So now he's back. He's fully healthy. And he's starting to, I think, develop the way that the Avs organization has anticipated.
Lauren, just how impressive has Jared Bednar's season been, you know, considering that he may have been a candidate of, you know, a coach on the hot seat. And now, you know, you look at what he's been able to do with this Colorado Avalanche team, especially a team that was dealing with such, you know, not necessarily internal turmoil, but, you know, the external pressure of everybody talking about the Matt Duchene situation. So just what kind of job has he been able to do with this team this year?
Well, sure. And you look at the situation in which he came into this organization, you know, Patrick Waugh abruptly resigned, and the organization is scrambling to find his replacement. They land on Jared Bednar, who has experienced a lot of success in the ECHL and obviously the AHL. And he was trying to get to know his players, install a system. You know, he brought in a couple of his coaches this past offseason. So I think last year it was just when things go wrong, it was just a snowball effect there. So he had a full off season. He brought in Ray Bennett from St. Louis to work on the power play. He also brought in UC Parkala, who's had a relationship with him in Verlamov, the goaltender, number one goaltender, who I believe is returning tonight. I would say there's about a 95% chance he's starting in net. They've had a relationship for 10 years dating back, you know, all the way back to the Russia days, when Varley was back there in the KHL. So he was able to do that, but he was also able to go talk to his captain, Gabe Landeskog, and say, this is your team, and I want you to put together this leadership group of you, of defenseman Eric Johnson and Tyson Berry, as well as Nathan MacKinnon, and even Blake Como, who has the A on his sweater now that Nathan MacKinnon is out. And he wanted them to take ownership and really develop an identity, and they've been able to do that, and he has credited a lot of that success to the leadership core. But that's what Jared Bednar, I think that's kind of the recipe that's made him so successful in the past.
Lauren Gardner is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Lauren covers the Colorado Avalanche for Altitude Sports. Lauren, Alex Kerfoot was a draft pick of the New Jersey Devils. He elected not to sign with the Devils and signed as a college free agent with the Avalanche this offseason. You know, he's got 32 points in 47 games. He's that rare sort of 23-year-old NHL rookie. You know, how impressive has he been for the Avalanche? And is he just another one of those players that adds to the depth of the team where they're, you know, a year ago or 2 years ago, it was just lacking beyond the top line of the MacKinnons and the Landeskogs?
Yeah, well, it was interesting, too, because you had that flip-flop with him and Will Butcher, who was at the University of Denver. So Avalanche fans were able to keep a close eye on him. He's a Hobey Baker Award winner, and, you know, they kind of flip-flopped, as I just said. So I don't know if people were really knowing what to expect from the 23-year-old, but Kerfoot has been really incredible. And he sees the ice well. He's a Harvard graduate, and he's so cerebral out there on the ice. He's a playmaker, and I think he's really earned the opportunity to go up there and center that top line. So, yeah, you talk about the secondary scoring and how all these guys are going to need to step up. He's certainly not Nathan MacKinnon, but he's going to make the guys around him better.
Lauren, we talked about Samuel Girard last segment before we had you on, and he obviously came over in the trade, the three-way trade that saw Matt Duchene go to the Ottawa Senators. How would you assess Samuel Girard's play with the Avalanche so far this year?
Well, he's 19 years old, and he does not play like it. He has so much poise out there. You should see him with the puck. He's calm. He's collected. He's paired a lot of times with Eric Johnson, and, you know, the 10-year vet definitely helps kind of settle him down. But guys, the things he can do, and he never gets hit. He's an amazing skater. He was actually a figure skater as a kid, and he glides out there, guys. It's so fun to watch him. He had his first goal with the Avs the other night in that overtime win against Edmonton, and I think he has exceeded expectations. And, you know, you look at the pieces in that trade for the Avalanche, and I think everyone now is going to be looking at Joe Sakic and trying to figure out how they can duplicate something like that. Because, even just, I don't want to say this, but a straight-up trade may have been worth it just based on what Girard has done so far and the type of potential that he's showcasing right now. And, you know, a lot of people talk about his size, but I think that's just the way the league is trending right now.
Well, Lauren, we're used to a passionate fan base inside Pepsi Center there in Denver. And, you know, the truth is the Colorado Avalanche haven't made the playoffs. They've only made it once in the last 7 years. So it's seen a bit of a hit in terms of attendance. But I noticed this year it seems that they've bounced back a little bit. They've gained another 1,000 from what they had last year in terms of average. Do you notice that there's a bit of an increase in interest in this team now that they seem to have kind of turned things around a little bit this season and given the fans, especially considering how good they've been at home, something more to cheer about?
Oh, absolutely. And guys, I grew up in Denver, moved away for a little while, and it was so cool to be able to come home and, you know, cover a hometown team. You know, let's not make any mistake. It's always going to be a Broncos town, a Denver Broncos town. But when the Colorado Avalanche came over from Quebec in, you know, 95-96, I remember, I won't tell you how old I was, but I was a little bit younger, and the whole city was just fell in love with that team. You know, they won the Cup the first year. You should have seen the streets downtown at the parade. I mean, it was just, you could not see a spot of pavement for at least a couple of miles. Everybody was just enamored with this team. And, you know, the Avalanche were really associated as with just greatness, and they were considered to be this elite brand, and you could not get a ticket to a game. And, yeah, after the lockouts, it dropped off a little bit, but they had this all-star team, and people wanted to see that any night. They couldn't see it, you know, in person. We were watching every single game. And I think, yes, the interest has dropped off a little bit, but I think the interest in, you know, hockey at a grassroots level in Colorado is growing. So that's definitely helped with the Avalanche. And to answer your question, you know, yeah, this year we've had a ton of sellouts. They retired Milan Hayduk's jersey, and they're playing the Minnesota Wild. They ended up just crushing them, and I was talking to, you know, Peter Forsberg and Joe Sakic and even Alex Pangay, and they were talking about how that crowd that evening really reminded them of the quote-unquote glory days when they had that all-star team.
Lauren Gardner is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Lauren covers the Colorado Avalanche for Altitude Sports. Lauren, you know, we were talking earlier before we brought you on about the third line for the Avalanche, Blake Como, Carl Soderberg, and Matt Nieto. I mean, you got three veteran players there who've been through all sorts of NHL battles in various locations. How reassuring is it for head coach Jared Bednar to be able to throw that third line out on the ice and sort of know what he's going to receive from them on a shift by shift basis, just the veteran presence that they bring to the ice and then to the dressing room as well?
Yeah, and that's what Jared Bednar calls that line, is his veteran line. And so Blake Como is having a pretty good year for, you know, the type of player that he is, and he's just been so solid, not only on the bench, talking to some of his teammates, and, you know, especially with all the youth. And, you know, Matt Nieto was out, I believe, 2 games ago with an injury back in. And when they get going, it's really fun to watch them. And I don't want to say it's a pleasant surprise, but it is. And they're so good on the PK, which has been great this season. And then Carl Soderberg, who had a disappointing season last year. And, you know, I think he just kind of went as the team went. But he really is rebounding. He's been a little bit quiet lately, and I talked to him about that, and he said he was a little frustrated, if not, you know, stressed out. He wants to continue performing for this team, especially with Nathan MacKinnon out of the lineup. But, yeah, this has been that rock-solid line that's been together for the greater part of the season. And so that line and that top line with Landeskog, Rantanen, and MacKinnon, those were the two stable lines, because Jared Bednar does not hesitate to mix things up if it's not clicking for the team. So, yeah, that veteran line, it's been really fun to have that there and just like kind of have that insurance with all the youth on the team.
Lauren, final question for you here. A name that a lot of Jets fans probably aren't familiar with is Dominic Toninato. He's on the fourth line right now for the Avalanche. I believe he's a fifth-round pick of the Toronto Maple Leafs, if I'm not mistaken. What have you liked about his game here for the Avalanche, playing on that fourth line for Jared Bednar?
Yeah, Toninato in his second call-up, he was actually sent down during the All-Star break, played a game in San Antonio and came back up, but insisted that that was just his second call-up, not third, because he has to play a game. He was at Minnesota Duluth, obviously experienced a lot of success at the college level. His dad also played in a couple of championships with Duluth as well, so it comes from just a great hockey lineage. And, you know, he's been out there, guys, and he's grinded on the fourth line. I think he showed some promise for Jared Bednar and company. Also, still young, made a couple of mistakes. in that last game before the break in St. Louis. He had that delay of game penalty where he just tipped the puck up into the stands, and it definitely cost Colorado. But they have liked what he's shown, and you know they're really looking to try and find some chemistry on that fourth line, because when they were going so well during that 10-game win streak, they had all four lines producing, even with Nathan MacKinnon playing. And I think that's something they're trying to find. They have Neil Yakupov down there, a player by the name of Gabriel Bork, who has just been pretty steady as well.
The Jets and the Avalanche will do battle tonight at Bell MTS Place. Lauren Gardner will be covering it for Altitude Sports. Lauren, appreciate your time this morning. Thanks very much for joining us. Enjoy the rest of your stay here in Winnipeg.
Appreciate it, boys. Have a good day.
You too, Lauren. Thanks again. When we come back, we preview or continue to look at the Jets' month of February. Much more to come. You're listening to Industrial Metals Winnipeg Jets Game Day and the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Saturday morning, you're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the ninth anniversary of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, Winnipeg's longest-running sports radio show. Welcome back to the program here on TSN 1290. This segment of the show brought to you by our good friends at Keener Jerseys, specializing in customization services and branded team apparel. Keener Jerseys is changing the game with world-class craftsmanship and unparalleled service. If you want awesome jerseys for your rec team or have a jersey you want customized, visit KeenerJerseys.com or check out their showroom at 982 Portage Avenue. That's the corner of Portage and Sherbourne. Tell them that Illegal Curve sent you. The Jets and the Avalanche tonight at Bell MTS Place, a game, of course, you can hear live on TSN 1290. Hustler and Rick will be by at 3 o'clock this afternoon, and then Kevin O and friends will take you right up to puck drop starting at 5 p.m. As Lauren Gardner indicated, she expects Semyon Varlamov to return to the Avalanche lineup. He should be in net for the Colorado Avs as they play the Jets tonight. Of course, Connor Hellebuck in net for the Jets. This month for the Jets, boys, it's sort of an interesting schedule. We know about the lengthy homestand that they're currently in the midst of. They have 11 games left in the month, 8 more on this homestand, then they go on the road for 2 and come back for 1 more. No back-to-backs, not a stressful month in terms, or no back-to-backs on the homestand, rather, none until the end of the month where they play a Friday in St. Louis and then a Saturday in Dallas. Would you expect, we asked Mike McIntyre about it, do you think Michael Hutchinson gets another start before that back-to-back at the end of the month? Could you see him starting maybe against Tuesday against the Coyotes or the game against the Florida Panthers a little bit later on, or is this Connor Hellebuck for the predominance of the month?
Yeah, Connor Hellebuck, Drew, as you know, is going to play the majority of these games. But, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if Michael Hutchinson or maybe Steve Mason will be back in the lineup and we're going to see him on this homestand. But, you know, they've got 8 games left here on this homestand. I would expect Hellebuck to probably get at least 6 or 7 of these starts. So then maybe Mason or Hutchinson gets 1 or 2 of these starts. But, you know, you mentioned that the Jets don't have any back-to-backs here over the next 8 games. But then they have that back-to-back at the end of the month on the road against St. Louis and Dallas. And for me, what's probably the most interesting about tonight's game and this upcoming homestand is the Jets have not actually had a game against the Central Division since mid-January against the Minnesota Wild and the Chicago Blackhawks, and they only have 3 games in their division on this homestand. So you'd expect, you know, the Jets to have all these games coming up against the Central. And they do, obviously, you know, tonight versus Colorado and then next Friday against St. Louis, the following Friday against Colorado. But you've got some games against the Eastern Conference, and then you've got some more games against the Pacific Division. Drew, you mentioned next Tuesday against Arizona, and then you've got LA to end the homestand. But certainly a lot more Central Division games coming up later in the month and then into March and April. But, I mean, let's be honest, this homestand could not have started better for the Jets. 3 of a possible 4 points. They could have easily had, you know, both wins here against Tampa Bay and Vegas. And then today's game is very important against the Avalanche. We talked about the Avalanche right now, fighting the Wild, fighting the Stars. I think the Stars have started to pull away a little bit here, but the Avalanche and the Wild are fighting for that last wild card spot, the 5th seed in the Central Division. And you know, this schedule, even though it's not what you would say the hardest schedule, it's not easy either when you consider that, you know, you've got games coming up against playoff teams. We talked about St. Louis. You've got the Rangers and Washington. Rangers are kind of, you know, battling for that wild card spot as well. But then you've got L.A. to end the homestand. And then, as we talked about, right after that homestand, that's the hardest part of the month against St. Louis and Dallas, two teams that are below you in the Central Division standings, and then Nashville back at home after the back-to-back. So, again, a lot of rest, not the hardest schedule, but the Jets certainly have, you know, the ability here to continue to remain atop the Central Division. And I think there's a good chance they win 7 or 8 of these games here at home. And there's no reason to believe that they won't, because of how good they've been all year at home.
Well, you mentioned the Colorado Avalanche, and of course they're the opponent tonight. The Jets are fortuitous in that they're going to play them twice without their best player in the lineup, Nathan MacKinnon. He's certainly not in the lineup tonight. Nobody really expects him to be back for that second game between the Jets and the Avalanche this month. You also mentioned the Dallas Stars, and it's sort of funny. It's been so long since the Jets played the Dallas Stars this year. I don't think they've played them since it's either October or November at this point in time. They're sort of been out of sight, out of mind. But this Dallas Stars team, a team that a lot of people expected to have a better year after they missed the playoffs last season, they bounced back with hiring Ken Hitchcock, shoring up the goaltending with Ben Bishop, getting Mark Mathot from the Vegas Golden Knights. This Dallas Stars team has been playing some very good hockey that most Jets fans might not have been paying attention to, just because it's been so long since we saw the Stars. If I recall correctly, the Jets played in Dallas, you know, early in the year. I think they beat the Stars early in the season, but that's a team that sort of you're going to see a lot more of. You're going to see them once this month, and you're going to see a lot more of them in March and April to wrap up the season.
Yeah, Drew, I don't think a lot of people around the league are talking about the Dallas Stars right now, but if I'm looking at, you know, some of the teams that you don't want to play in the playoffs, Dallas is one of them. They have the fourth most goals in the Western Conference right now. Obviously, you know, the Jets and the Golden Knights are 1 and 2 in the Western Conference in goals, and then you have the Avalanche just ahead of the Dallas Stars right now in goals. But it's a very good offensive team, and as you mentioned, I mean, much better defensive team this year, mm-hmm. led by Ben Bishop in goal. They needed to shore up the goaltending after last year's debacle, and, you know, Bishop has provided them excellent goaltending. So you're absolutely right. I mean, Dallas isn't one of those teams, I think, that the Jets have been focused on a lot, not just because they haven't played them, but because they haven't really had to deal with them at the top of the Central Division standings. But I think they see the Dallas Stars, and they keep winning and winning. You know, right now, just 1 point ahead of the Minnesota Wild. That's because the Stars didn't have a great start to the season, but definitely a team to watch out for. I don't think that they're going to, you know, battle the Jets or the Predators for first in the Central. They're too far back right now, but definitely, you know, a team that you could quite likely play in the first round.
Dave, the Jets 1-0-1 through the first two games of this 10-game homestand. What's a successful homestand to you record-wise? I mean, you look at the opponents. You got the Colorado Avalanche twice. You got the Blues. You have, you know, the Washington Capitals, who are another team not a lot of people are talking about despite their impressive play in the Metropolitan Division this year. You have a struggling New York Rangers team. You got the Coyotes and the Panthers. Both of those teams are well out of the playoff race. The LA Kings have dropped off after a good start to the season. What's a successful record on the remainder of this homestand, or for the entirety of the month of February with 11 games left this month?
Just looking at the homestands, I think it's reasonable to think the Jets could go 7-2-1 against these teams. I mean, they're one of the best teams in the Western Conference. So, you know, you look at that and you think to yourself, they're playing, as Ezzie just talked about, they're playing so well at home that they just have that confidence. And you know, you really don't think that this team is, you know, Brian Little talked about it a little bit, about how this team doesn't panic when they're down a goal because they know they can get a goal back. So there's no need to open up their game and change things up. They just keep kind of playing that little bit of a cat and mouse game. And you know, Blake Wheeler's talked about it throughout the season, how they're not in that panic mode if they get down a goal, because the fact is they know that they have the ability to score, so there's no point in opening up their game and taking the chances needlessly, which of course allows chances against. And you know, I mean, look, we've seen the benefit of that. The beneficiaries of that have largely been the goalies, because the goalies, have specifically Connor Hellebuck, has had a lot better of a defensively sound team for the most part in front of him. So I think this is a Jets team that's really I think they're taking it all in stride. They don't get overly excited over a win. They don't get overly emotional about a loss. Obviously, aside
Thursday's
from,
exception.
I was going to say Thursday being an exception, but the fact of the matter, although truth to be told, you know, they're pissed off in that vein after, you know, immediately thereafter. But you know, the next day they had already said, you know, there was some questioning, but they'd already moved on. And again, when you look at the schedule, you know, you guys talked about it earlier in the segment talking about goaltenders. To me, the only game that's kind of a potential is that Rangers game. I see the Rangers game as a potential for Michael Hutchinson or Steve Mason if he happens to be back and ready to play. Then that I could see that game. Otherwise, I see it's Connor Hellebuck getting the at least, you know, 90% of the starts.
That's because they play Friday night against the Blues, and then it's sort of a quicker turnaround with the Sunday afternoon start against the Rangers.
I think the fact is that there's no point in resting Hellebuck. You've given him the rest after the All-Star break. The fact is you've got these 2 days in between games for the most part, with the exception of that Rangers game. Then if he gets the break from the Friday night after St. Louis, and then he doesn't play the Sunday against the Rangers, he'll play on Tuesday against the Capitals, and then he'll have a couple days before he plays Colorado. And again, then you have him against the Panthers. So I think that Connor Hellebuck is going to see the majority of these starts.
We have some breaking news from Bell MTS Place. Paul Maurice meeting the media after the game day skate. Adam Lowry not a player for the Winnipeg Jets tonight. Obviously still banged up after Thursday night when he left the game early. So the Jets will be without Adam Lowry in the lineup tonight. Mark Scheifele still not ready to return. No surprise there. Paul Maurice not ruling out next Friday, though. So it sounds like maybe they're targeting next Friday for Mark Scheifele to return to the Winnipeg Jets lineup.
So I would imagine, based on yesterday's line combinations, that Andrew Kopp goes in third-line center.
Third-line center Marco Dano would go in to the Winnipeg Jets lineup to replace Adam Lowry as well. So the Jets will be without their third-line center in Adam Lowry. They'll still be without their first-line center, but you know that's sort of the way it's been for the last few weeks. So no real surprise for the Winnipeg Jets. Still banged up, but they obviously want to get Adam Lowry back to full health before they rush him back into the lineup. When we come back, Stephen Wino of the Associated Press is going to join us. We'll look around the NHL with Stephen. Might even touch on the Super Bowl. He's, I believe, a Philly resident or a Philly native, if I'm not mistaken. That's up next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show as part of Industrial Metals Winnipeg Jets Game Day on TSN 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.